We're back on Filter, and this is Paul Rice, KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend. And it is my pleasure to welcome George Marie on, who you should be able to hear her now if she talks. Let's see.
I'm here.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Well, thanks for having me, Paul.
Well, it's my pleasure. We wanted actually George. So George is the director of the Port Townsend Writers Conference over at Fort Worden with Centrum, and George was actually going to be the very second guest on Filter, the first episode of Filter. So we're happy to get you now and to get you at such an interesting time. Lots of cool things to talk about. So maybe we could just have you introduce yourself a little bit, however you feel comfortable doing that, George.
Okay.
Yeah. Who are you?
So the first thing I would have to say is that I can hear an echo.
Oh, yeah. Is your radio on right now?
It's not.
Oh, okay.
Okay, now I can't hear it. Okay, that's better.
I'm sure it's my fault. I take all responsibility.
It's probably your fault, Paul.
Yeah.
Just kidding. So the first thing I want to say is I'm actually the program manager for writing at Centrum. There's a slight distinction in that Sam Ligon is the artistic director. So he and I work in collaboration to bring writers, but it's kind of his creative vision that I help support, as well as supporting administratively and through the vision and mission of the writing program, all the participants who come to Centrum to learn to write and to build community and come together collectively. So I just wanted to clarify that. And
that's my bad for not doing my research.
That's okay. No, it's actually it's an easy mistake to make. And so this is my first year running the writing conference. We do it every third week, typically in July. We've postponed it this year. We're going to have it next year. It's going to be the same lineup, maybe one or two exceptions, but for the most part, the same lineup. And this year, we're going to try to offer smaller workshops, perhaps throughout the year, but definitely some online workshops. We're going to be doing an online workshop, actually, in the same week as what would be normally the Writer's Week, which this year is July 13th through the 17th. So can I take a moment to kind of pitch it?
Please do. Please do.
Okay, great. So we have six writers. Rebecca Brown and Deborah Gwartney are teaching nonfiction. Unfortunately, their workshops filled up right away, like within the first couple of days. Robert Lopez and Sam Ligon are teaching fiction, and Alexandria Teague and Paisley Rechdahl will be teaching poetry. Lopez only has one spot left in his fiction class, so I would encourage people to go to centrum.org, look at the drop-down menu for the writer's program, look at the summer online writing workshops or intensives to find out more about his class. Sam Ligon has a few spots. Again, he's our artistic director. He's also a purveyor of pie and whiskey.
And, the best kind of purveyor.
He's going to be teaching a class called The List Story, which is really just a device to get people to write and drink whiskey, if his class description is to be believed.
And that one still has availability?
What's that?
That one still has availability?
Yeah, that one has at least two or three spots. Alexandria Teague has a couple of spots in her poetry class. That's happening in the morning. That's titled Realm of Music's Expanding Poetic Sound. And then Paisley Rechdahl, who's teaching poetry and is easily one of the most brilliant writers that I know. She's terrifyingly smart, actually, but also approachable and very generous, is leading a workshop that is encouraging all of us to just get past whatever is stopping us from doing our writing and produce work. And that's afternoons 1 to 3. And there's still many scholarships available, so I would really encourage people to, even if you don't feel like you have the funds to take the class, the power of writing, I think, right now is so important for each of us individually. and I would be happy to make space available for you to take the class, even if you don't have the finances to do
so. That's great. So we're talking to George Marie, Program Manager for the Port Townsend Writers Conference. And George, if folks are interested to, in the classes or the scholarship opportunities, what's the best way to get in touch with you or get signed up?
Yeah, so you can go to the website to register. If you want a scholarship, the best way to get a scholarship is to contact me. And I'm at gmarie, that's G-M-A-R-I-E, at centrum.org. And just let me know that you want to take a class, but that you don't have the funds to pay for the class in full. And also just let me know what kind of financial assistance you need in order to be able to take the class. That's really the only qualifying questions at this point.
Well, that's really cool. And thank you for opening opening the roles for folks who might not normally be able to take these kinds of classes.
I think that's something that Centrum does really well. But I also recognize that there's a lot of barriers that keep people from engaging in classes, whether it be financial barriers or just feeling not very confident about their abilities. And so I think it should also be said that we accept writers at every level, from just beginning to write all the way through to published writers. Everyone is accepted. Everyone is encouraged. And we're all learning from each other. So
that's rad. Yep. So, and that's kind of one of those topics of the classes is about that sort of how do you get past yourself and stop worrying about what you bring to the table and just write. Is that correct? Did I get the description of that right, or am I missing something?
Well, I feel like that's definitely what I would say about Paisley's class, but you should go to the website to look at her class description to get a better idea of it. Paisley is really, she's somebody that the first time I saw her walking across campus, I was intimidated, just the way that she walks, the way that she carries herself. But she's really so brilliant in her writing and in her ability to open herself up and open the writers that work with her up to their own storytelling and to a kind of a confidence and an engagement with the I that is the subject, right? The writer themselves within a piece of work. So I highly recommend her class.
And you're a writer yourself, George. Is that correct?
I am.
Are you proud? Proud writer?
What's that?
A proud writer or
I don't know. Writer.
Yeah, an out and about writer, a self-proclaimed writer.
I feel like I'm an artist, and I'm a writer, and I think that what is, if I can just launch into something for a minute, I think what's really exciting about what's happening right now is that the labels that we give ourselves, like what it means to be a writer. So I'm a published writer.
Cool.
And I studied writing. But I think in a large way, we're all becoming writers now.
Mm.
And we're watching this play out in real time. We're watching that people are sitting in front of their computers. They are on Facebook and on Twitter. They're writing. They're offering cultural critiques. They're writing about the events of their day. They're reacting to things that they're seeing. We're listening to oral stories on Instagram stories and on TikTok. More and more writers are going to platforms such as Medium to publish their own work. And so I think we're seeing that in a real way, we are all writers. Regardless of whether or not you want to call yourself a writer, we all are writing our own stories. And there's real power there.
Yeah. So let me ask you, as a published writer, you know, you don't see a, like, do you, when you think of somebody who only would, say, write on Twitter, or on a Facebook post, do you have any inclination to kind of not gatekeep, but say, you know, well, yeah, okay, you're writing on Twitter, but it's not the same as actually writing a finished piece and submitting it to a publisher?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think that there was a time in which I definitely would have taken those kinds of positions and drawn those kinds of lines. But I don't think we should do that anymore. I think we should start ripping all of that down and ripping that apart. Because for one thing, I think it's important for us to grapple with the fact that the publishing world has been dominated by, I'm just going to be frank, and it's not going to sound nice, but it's been dominated by patriarchy and white supremacy for a long time. I think I've been looking at a lot of studies, and it's still 80% to 90% of the leadership in the publishing industry is white. And the
male,
vast majority,
too?
What's that?
And male, too?
And male. Well, I actually didn't look at the male aspect, but
it's a safe bet, maybe.
I'm gonna guess that it's pretty high. And so when we have these kinds of institutions that are the vanguards, right, of who gets published, what stories get told, who gets to tell the stories, and the consequences of all of that, we see that particular groups of people are not being allowed to tell their own stories. They're not being allowed to write for themselves. And so I think using publishing as a litmus test on who gets to be a writer and who doesn't get to be a writer is probably as embedded and rooted in racism as is, you know, saying that those stories aren't important to us anyway, or saying that the only people that we're going to listen to harken back to the piece that you just read before I came on the air, are the police, you know, or are the controllers of the narrative.
Yeah.
So
that's interesting.
I think if we can take the approach that if people are writing on Facebook, if people are putting their stories out there, or if people are participating in oral storytelling, these stories are valid. They are powerful. These are narratives, and absolutely everybody participating in this is writing.
Yeah. I had two thoughts while you were talking, and one that was, wondering about if people who say they're writers and want to identify as writers, they set the pinnacle of existence as being published and in bookstores or available on Kindle, although anybody could do that, I guess. But do you just have a publisher and have a published book deal where you got an advance, if that's sort of the highest goal. And I hadn't really thought about what if always that had been, it must be true, that had always been kind of skewed against, so many different groups of people. And we all have to just assume that the best writing that's out there is the ones that got published, but that just can't be, that can't be real.
It's not real.
And then my other thought was Michelle Obama. I remember her quote about once she got into the upper echelons of politics, she realized that like there's this real sense of folks pretending like they know what they're doing, but they have actually no clue. So sort of like reverse imposter syndrome, you feel like you're in a place where you can't compete. Like I read brilliant novels and I'm like, I could never write that. I could never write anything close to that. Where we almost set ourselves up for not being able to do these things. And it's kind of, and maybe that for some people, especially people of color and women and BIPOC women, you know, like that there may be actual like design behind keeping those voices out of the conversation.
I think there's absolute design in keeping those voices out. I kind of want to, this is reminding me a lot of this controversy that came up recently, and I'm hoping it's okay that we can talk about it a little bit. It's this book called American Dirt, and it was published by Flatiron Books, which is a Macmillan subset. And that book, so it was written by Janine Cummins. It's about a family that's migrating from Mexico to America. And it caused it caused a huge controversy, and it crashed. And that had everything to do with the way it was written, and who wrote it, and who it was written for, and how it was published, and how much money that white writer was given in advance for her book, and how it was marketed, and how it was promoted. And it doesn't really matter what I personally think about the book, and I don't want to say that I'm here in a different kind of gatekeeping role to tell people what they can and cannot write about. But I feel like it's clear from the first page of the book American Dirt that this book was written for a white audience, and it's written to make the experience of this Mexican family immigrating from Mexico to America consumable for the average American, for the average white American reader. And there's a lot of reasons that you get clued into that, right? There's these Spanish words that are kind of dotted throughout the text in the first chapter and that are italicized in what seems like a way to clue the writer that this book is about Mexicans and it takes place in Mexico. And then, you know, you have a narrative that's filled with stereotypes. It's obvious to me as a reader, and I think to all critical readers, that this book was not written for the people that it portrays. And I don't think anybody at this point, even the writer or the publishers, will debate that. But what is being debated is whether or not that kind of writing has value anymore, because I think that that kind of writing has been the standard for a very long time. And now what we're seeing is that perhaps, maybe, white audiences are maturing to a point where we don't need a kind of white translator anymore. We don't need to have people's cultural experiences or personal experiences made more palatable for us. I think that does it a disservice, not only to us, but to everyone, because it subscribes a way of reading and writing that reduces our cultural experiences, our cultural lives, our beings, in every way possible to something that is, as Miriam Grumba says in her epic scorched earth takedown of the book, is mayonnaise, right? It's just like the slathering of this kind of tasteless glob upon what is actually real and authentic, a real and authentic story. And I don't need to hear that real and authentic story from somebody who doesn't understand the culture in which they're writing from. Now, on the opposite side of that, I would say that there's other books like Kristen Mollaris Young, who wrote Subduction, in which she's writing about an author, an anthropologist who's trying to take on all of the facets of complexity and critical examination that comes with studying another culture and trying to, as an anthropologist, understand another culture. So there's different ways in which we can get into those stories, but personally, as a reader and as a writer, I'm not interested in having a story reduced to make it more palatable for me. I want complexity. I want critique. I want to see and feel and hear the agency of not only the characters, the protagonists and the antagonists of a story, but of the author themselves. I want to be able to see that author. I want to see I don't want a detached, omnipresent, omniscient narrator who's coming from a place of authority to what a story is about. I actually want to hear the author's voice in the story.
We're talking to George Marie, the program manager from the Port Townsend Writers Conference. We're back with George Marie, and that was Look What They've Done With My Song, Ma, and it kind of fits in perfectly in a lot of ways with what we were talking about in terms of who gets to tell whose story now. And one of the classes that you're going to be offering, or that I think, was it Paisley who's offering the class about learning how, I guess, how to find your own voice to get past it all, and to if we connect it back to the classes, I feel like there's some connection there.
Well, you know, actually, I think that, let me look up really quickly Rebecca Brown's class, because it's full, so I didn't really want to talk about it, because I feel like I'm dangling something in front of everybody that they can't have. But let's see if I can find it. So, because I think it filled quickly, precisely because of what we're talking about. And her class is called This Is Not Just About You. And so, if I can, just take a moment.
Yeah.
She said, do you want to write about yourself but not be self-indulgent, or tell personal stories that don't come across as whiny and me, 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 and too much information? In this workshop, we will look at how writers contextualize personal material within broader concerns, politics, history, social, and material environments, to help craft personal vignettes, prose poems, and essays with weight and heft. And then, you know, it keeps going, but I won't tease everybody like that. But I think it's really interesting, because I find that memoir is a genre. It's a creative nonfiction. It differs from an autobiography in that it is more subjective, and it gives more room for subjectivity in the narrative itself. And it's a genre that has really exploded in recent years. And I find that that is being reflective in a kind of larger cultural narrative critique, whether it's books by, say, Ibram Kendi, who wrote How to Be an Anti-Racist, or Ta-Nehisi Coates, who wrote Between the World and Me, I would even say Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, who wrote, whose TED Talk, she's written quite a few books, but whose TED Talk is what is that TED Talk called? It's the...
No Pressure.
No Pressure, just on the radio.
Yeah, just live on the radio. We're talking to George Marie from the Port Townsend Writers Conference. She's looking up something on Google right now.
I remember that we were going to talk about my dyslexia for a moment because of the fact that there were going to be periods where I was going to fall into a quiet moment.
Yeah.
And there was just going to be like dead air. And we wanted to prepare people for that. And then we forgot.
So yeah, we forgot to give that PSA. George is dyslexic, but I mean, you know, that is not a hindrance for her by any means in terms of blowing my mind with a lot of these thoughts and ideas.
Thank you so much, Paul. But it's called The Danger of a Single Story, is the TED Talk. And, you know, the whole idea here is that when we have the detached narrator, right, when we have this authoritative voice who in third person is telling us a story, we're getting a single perspective there. We're getting a single story. We think we're getting a larger picture, an overall global perspective of the story. But what's actually happening is that we're getting a narrator who's giving us a perspective and then hiding behind that perspective and not revealing himself. And I say himself purposefully because traditionally there is an omniscient narrator, and traditionally that is embodied by a particular kind of person, and that person has traditionally been white and been male. And we see this in a lot of different types of storytelling. We mostly see it, though, in storytelling that doesn't appear to be storytelling. So stories and narratives that are written from, say, a scientific viewpoint or a historical viewpoint, oftentimes the narrator is absent. Right? We're not seeing the narrator on the page. And I feel like there's a wondrous shift in the writing world that is also reflective in what's happening in our on the streets of America, where the people, if you will, are rising up and they're saying, you don't get to write our stories anymore for us. You don't get to tell our stories for us anymore. You cannot inscribe the meaning that you have about our bodies onto our bodies anymore. We're writing our own stories. And I really wanted to cuss there, but I can't.
Nice save. Nice save. Yeah. Yeah, I don't have to call the FCC. But that's really interesting, because I think that it's hard for me as not hard, but you know, as a white man, the important work that I want to do is to kind of unlearn that narrator, that person that is sort of this powerful figure, realize that so many stories have been told kind of for the white gaze and for the male white gaze, and now how our perspectives can actually be shifted, but only if we are like willing to say relinquish control of other people's narratives, to say now it's time to hear the stories that you didn't want to hear because you were too scared that you would feel guilty about it or feel accused.
Yeah, that's right. And I think we can also give ourselves over to the critique that this is the way that covertly white supremacy, patriarchy, homophobia, transphobia exists. You know, it exists in our language. It exists in the way that we make meaning. And so when we give ourselves over to that critique and we allow ourselves to see how as writers or as readers, we're participating in we're complicit, right, with white supremacy, with patriarchy, with heteronormative narratives.
Yeah.
And then we can allow, I think as soon as we see and give ourselves over to that, then we can start taking it apart and critiquing and looking at it with fresh eyes that have more perspective, fresh eyes that look outside of ourselves. So that is kind of the juxtaposition. I think that's the dichotomy here that is so crucial, is that through the eye, through admitting that I am a subject, right, and that I have a particular perspective in the world, I then allow myself to engage with critically other perspectives.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of the key to dismantling all of these systems that function as oppressive, you know, in oppressive ways.
So as a white man, I can speak for all white men, actually.
Right.
But in this, I'm going to speak for all white men here and say, okay. So what can be our role here, especially white men who are writers? You know, is this a chance for us to step back and say, we're not going to write right now. We're not going to cloud the space. We're going to let other voices be heard. And I guess this can be just white people in general. We don't have to make it specific to men. But, you know, what's our role in, you know, if we say we care about changing the narrative and letting all the other stories in, how can we take action to make that change as writers?
I think we don't even have enough time to go into that.
You have three. You have 3 minutes. Right, you have 3 minutes. I needed an answer.
Three minutes. I do think that there is a responsibility that we have as writers to take a step back and to give space to writers of color, to give space to Black writers, Black voices, to give space to Latinx writers, Latinx voices, to give space to queer writers, to give space to trans writers, and to the voices, whether or not, you know, so it's not just the written word. I don't want to privilege just the written word. It's about oral stories as well. And when we find ourselves wanting to write from that place of authority, right, to challenge that in ourselves. If I could just really quickly, you know, the Poetry Foundation just recently published a poem. It was a 30-page poem written by Michael Dickman, who is somebody I know. He's somebody who I consider a friend. At least I went to college with him many years ago. And that 30-page poem that is mostly white space takes up 100 pages of the poetry magazine, the Poetry Literary Journal.
In full disclosure, George sent me this poem, and it is like 30 pages where half the page is blank white.
It's more than half. It's more than half. I mean, it is. My friend Erin Osborne put it, I think, so brilliantly when she said it's the equivalent of man spreading. You know, I mean, it is, the vast majority of the poem is white space. And to be fair, my book is also a lot of white space. But I think the real problem is that there's no tension. The tension is absolved by the white space. But it's a bad poem, and there's a lot of problems with it. But the biggest problem with it is, why in a 100-page literary journal publish a 30-page poem that of a white male writer who's been widely published, right after you come out with a statement saying that you're going to work harder to publish voices from writers of color, from Black writers, from Latinx writers, from Asian writers. I mean, why would you do that? There's a real blindness there.
Yeah.
On Michael Dickman's part, and on, I think, Poetry Foundation's part. And I think taking a moment to take a step back and perhaps not publish right now, just so that we can continue to push and elevate and amplify voices that are screaming out to be heard. These are not faceless, voiceless masses. These are writers, brilliant, incredible writers who deserve to be heard. And to be quite honest, to be fair to us all, we deserve to hear their stories too. It will make us better human beings, better subjective human beings in this world.
Thank you, George Marie. This is to be continued. We're going to have you on the show again real soon, because I feel like, I mean, as a writer and as somebody who wants to be a force for good and change in the world, I think we can have a lot of useful conversations about the next steps. So thank you so much for being here today. And I hope everybody checks out the Port Townsend Writers Conference and signs up for a conference if there are any still available when you look.
Thanks so much for having me, Paul.
Yeah, we'll do this again soon, George. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thanks.